Bobby, you're here again.
Yeah, my doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of seven entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of seven sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dub Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Worldwide Radio Network. This is the Mo Green Poetry Hour. I'm Rafael Alvarado, and I have my co-host, Hannah Weir.
Howdy ho.
Howdy, right? Oh, cool.
What
was it? How did I screw it up?
The last name.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm open to various interpretations. Keeps it interesting. I never know what my name is from day to day.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't really screw up Alvarado.
How do you screw that up?
I don't know. People have put down Alvarez. People have put in, they left out the D, they left out the O, they put in an I. People get creative.
Sorry, go ahead.
Right now we're waiting for Robert Suarez of Homeboy Industries Poets to call in. And as usual, this is my fun time. So, Hannah, you got anything coming up? Any poetry thing coming up?
Yeah, but they're all in jail, so it's not like I can really invite people to come watch me read.
Well, yeah, that would be wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless you end up committing a crime, which I don't suggest you do, just to come see me read.
Well, I don't know. Some people might really, really, really want to see you read. Could you imagine that somebody was stalking you and he figured out the only way he could see you would be reading in the jail and he actually went to jail?
That would make an excellent poem.
That'd be interesting.
Yes, it would.
I did it for you. I'm doing time for you. And you're like, cool, he's in jail.
Not love without incarceration.
Yeah, it's not fun. I would avoid it if you could. You know.
So I'm reading the obituaries right now, and I always try to find the one that I think is the most depressing.
Really?
Yeah, like the one where it's like I read it and I think to myself, wow, if I had had that life, I would have offed myself a long, long time ago.
Nice.
And the award of today goes to a woman named Doris Jean. Doris Jean was born in Indiana, and she began her career while in high school at the Planters Peanut Store. At the age of 18, she transferred to Hostess Training School in Kansas City. And then somehow from Hostess Training School, she went on to accompany President Eisenhower on his official trip to Germany and President Reagan to Japan. That part's kind of cool, I guess. I mean, you want to hang out with two kind of questionable presidents, you know. But you got to wonder what kind of girl takes a job working at a Planters peanut store.
I don't know. I mean, what kind of person wants to be the manager of, like, of a Fedco? And says it was conviction. I remember someone telling me that, and that was their life's goal, to be a manager of a department store.
Huh.
And it makes them happy. I don't know.
Happy, or are we just taught not to want more?
Hmm?
Does that really make someone happy, do you think?
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, it's like when you go to the DMV. You know, you look at these people, and you're like, is this what they've always wanted? They always wanted to work at the DMV?
You know.
Answer me that.
I don't know. I mean, but my probation officer likes his job.
Well, that's a cool job. You know, you're helping people.
Well, he actually digs it. I mean, because people have come up to him and, you know, who've gotten these high-profile jobs and suddenly lost their job and now they're broke.
Mm-hmm.
But his job is consistent. He's got Social Security and all this stuff and, you know, he's got his pension coming, and he's set.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very, very honorable job. I mean, doing my workshops, you know, on the inside, I've obviously run across my fair share of POs, and, you know, the ones that I've met have all been, you know, good at what they do, and they're doing it because they actually give a shit about other people.
Well, yeah, no, I think, I like the way he is, actually. He's kind of funny. He's like, you know, if I have to chase you, then I'm going to put you away, but if you come in, you do what you need to do, he's good. I appreciate that. And he's got a really kickback attitude about things, and, you know, I could actually talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard horror stories about probation officers. The burnout guy who wants to put you away just because he doesn't like you. You know.
Yeah. A lot of people, you know, that deal with the various branches of law enforcement, I've found, a lot of them have power issues, control issues.
Mm-hmm.
They have this little microcosm of power, and they abuse the hell out of it.
Yeah.
But I always question someone that chooses to go into, you know, being a police officer, because you got to wonder what their motivation is.
Oh, they want to shoot the gun. They really want to shoot the gun. Come on, you got a gun, you want to shoot the gun. At least you want to shoot it at something.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I mean, it's a power thing. I mean, that Billy Club, they want to whack somebody. Trust me, I know. They really want to whack you.
Well, I could see how it'd be kind of cathartic, I guess.
Which part? The whacking somebody?
Yeah.
How's that cathartic? It hurts.
Well, not for the person getting whacked, but for the you know, whacker, not the wacky. You know.
I don't know.
Be able to take a club and beat the crap out of somebody. I mean, you feel good.
And get paid to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you
really
wear
can't
blue.
Whack anybody so much.
I look good in blue. I'd like to.
What a what?
I said I look good in blue.
So you would wear a police uniform if someone gave it to you.
Sure, why not?
Hmm?
I said, sure, why not? I like wearing blue.
Huh?
I like hitting things. Oh. I think
yeah, so do I, but, you know, I mean, I like hitting people for a reason. I mean, actually, I like to have a reason to beat the crap out of somebody other than just to beat the crap out of them. A little focus.
Oh, no, I wouldn't hit someone for no reason. I never have and I never will. But every living creature is capable of attack if sufficiently provoked.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
I mean, no, people need, yeah, I can see the provoke thing.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their breaking point. You can
I've pushed a lot of people there.
Well, I'm sure you have, and I'm sure that you've been pushed to your breaking point, too. Everyone has.
Yeah, no, I have. You know, I mean, you know, it's always one little thing that, you know, puts you over.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't even notice that one little thing that's pushing you over. They think it's just like a normal day of, like, grabbing you.
Yeah.
People really don't pay attention.
No. You know, and that's one thing I always make myself consider whenever I think someone's being like an asshole or something. I always remind myself, okay, you know, maybe their dog just died, you know, or something like that. Always like try to give them the benefit, you know, that something might be going on in their life that you don't, that you aren't aware of that could be accounting for their, you know, unfavorable behavior. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, with my boss at work, I kind of figure he's having a shitty life, so. Or his marriage isn't working and he's just pissed off, or he's just a nasty person and they got to deal with it.
Does your boss at work listen to this show?
I wouldn't care if he did. He already knows how I feel about him.
Oh. You know what you need
like
to
I don't hide
okay, you have a job. You have a job. A lot of people don't have jobs right now.
You know, yeah, that's a good and bad thing, you know. The problem with having, you know, you want to be respected, the same thing, you know, when you're being disrespected, you kind of just sometimes have to lump it in because it is hard to get a job right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just take it, you know, as much as I hate it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to, like, you know, swallow your pride and just do what you got to do.
I've never been good at that. When I was 6 years old, I was kicked out of karate for refusing to bow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got kicked out because I accidentally almost broke somebody's nose, because when the pizza wasn't looking, he nailed me in the balls, and then when he saw me connect on the guy's face. He didn't see me get nailed in the balls.
Oh, in karate?
Yeah.
Oh.
Guy got me good, and I just connected really hard, and that's what he saw. He saw me connecting.
How old were you?
I was about 15.
Oh, okay. A little different.
Oh, yeah. But then again, in, I think, first or second grade, I was at a friend's birthday party,
mm-hmm.
and he told me this girl we both had a crush on liked him more, and I gave him a bloody nose.
Hmm.
Not the place to give somebody a bloody nose, you know?
Yes,
at a birthday
no,
party.
Your superior handling skills of negative emotions started at a very young age.
Yes, they did.
Wow.
Everybody just looked at me and I go, did you see what you just did? I'm like, oh, crap. I guess I'm going to have to leave now.
Yeah, so I have to ask you about this. So you were 6 years old, already liking girls, not even that, but liking them to the point where you would strike someone else who was competing for their affections.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Are you kidding? And I think second or third grade, the girl asked me to, like, she wanted an ice cream really bad, but the ice cream was all locked up. I broke in. I got her ice cream, and then, like, the principal thought she had an ice cream and was wondering where she got it. She gave me up in 2 seconds.
Of course she did. She already got what she wanted. She wanted ice cream.
Yeah.
She wants you.
Yeah. She goes, well, Raphael got it for me. I'm like, oh, crap. At an early age, I was already breaking into things for women.
Well, yeah. That's why you never give women what they want right away.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Never give anybody what they want right away. You know, I mean, you got to make them wait or make them appreciate it. If you give it away too soon, then it's not appreciated.
Yeah, exactly.
It took me years to learn that, you know. No, easy access is probably the thing that ruins relationships right away.
That's true. And I notice that more and more with a lot of my girlfriends, you know. I just see so many girls today that just give it up like it doesn't fucking mean anything. You know.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why the guys don't call.
Well, yeah, I mean. Yeah, they don't call just because it's like, I don't know, I think it's a respect thing. Sometimes people see that you don't respect yourself enough to make people wait.
Yeah, of course.
You know.
Well, there's no challenge either. You know, there's got to be a challenge for it to be interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, the thing to me about flirting is the time it takes to get there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The journey. Get to know somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the whole point, you know, the journey to get there.
Yeah.
You know?
I thought that I should take flirting lessons. I'm horrible at flirting. I just can't do it. It always comes across as awkward and self-deprecating, and then I end up offending them, and then it's just, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty good at flirting.
Are you?
Yeah. What do you mean, are you? You know something I don't know, that I suck?
I'm just making conversation here.
Oh, crap, someone told you something. I suck at flirting.
Oh, people have told me many things. Do I listen to them all? No.
Oh.
Ugh. Did you do anything fun this weekend?
Huh? I'm going to go to a reading today. See my friend Eloise Klein Healy read and see, you know, the feature that we have next week, Michelle Biting.
Yeah.
You know, actually meet her in person, you know, because it's, I don't know, you know, it's...
Is this the one up in Los Feliz?
Yep.
Okay.
You know, I mean, but yeah, I mean, I like going to readings just to check out the work out of, you know, one, out of respect, too. So, you know, show them that, you know,
yeah,
you give shit about their work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a reading that I'm going to October 30th in Whittier.
Where's
that? Whittier. Whenever I go to Whittier, I feel like I'm going to be shot. But I'm going there to support my friends. So
I've been there a couple times for readings.
What's that?
I used to go there in 93, 94 for a reading at a place called Insomniac Bookstore.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but that's the only reason I went. I mean, that's too close to Nixon country. You know?
Nixon has his own country?
Yo, Berlinda, it's pretty close to there, isn't it?
Is it? I try to stay away from there, that whole region. I'm spoiled. I'm South Orange County. We don't even let the homeless hang out here. We ship them off to Santa Ana.
There you go. That's nice of you.
Not me personally. The police.
Yeah, you know, you got to keep it clean. No, I think you're going to start shipping them off to Riverside.
Yeah, it's too much of a drive. Santa Ana is already kind of a dumping ground, so, like, the cops where I live, and they just, you know, pick up the vagrants and drop them off Santa Ana city lines and say, hey, stay here.
Yeah, you know, I love what County was doing, like, you know, just dropping people off anywhere in the middle of the night, telling them, go find a job.
Yep.
Don't come
care.
Back. You know.
They don't care. It doesn't affect them personally.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, Sashu Foster just said he can't be the guest right now. I've been on Facebook trying to get people to read poetry.
Oh,
really? It's funny. It's like sometimes you can't even give it away.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think I have Ann Tweedy. There she is. She called in. Okay, okay. And I'm going to click her on.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. And we have Ann Tweedy and we have Hannah. Say hello to Ann. And
hello. Hello. How are you doing?
Pretty well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So you want to tell us a little bit something about you, because we don't have no bio for you right now.
Well, I've been writing for about 11 years.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I've been published in some magazines.
Okay. Very cool.
And are you reading anywhere in the near future?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I just moved to a new area.
And where is that?
In San Diego.
They're really mean to people that drink out there, aren't they?
They're what?
They're really mean to people who drink and try to party out in San Diego, I hear.
Oh, I wouldn't know.
That's never mind. So do you have some poems you want to read?
Sure, I can read some poems.
Okay.
Should I just get started?
Please do.
What?
Hmm?
I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I said sure.
He said please do. Raphael, for God's sake, stop mumbling and speak up.
Okay.
I haven't had enough coffee. I only had one red eye. That's not enough to wake me up.
I don't care about your caffeine-related excuses. You mumble.
I haven't had any. I'll do my best.
She has had any, and she sounds bright and chipper.
Okay,
maybe
this
she's
one...
a normally bright and chipper person. Go on, sorry.
This one is called Blue. If I said bluebirds and Stellar Jays are not really blue, that blueness is a trick, their feathers are engineered to reflect, would this mean anything to you, as if other blueness were a state of being separate from perception? Or is it? If the feathers look blue, doesn't that make the bird blue or blue enough? Or are we to test blue objectively to make sure it's real? And since birds have been tested and fail, the whole avian kingdom may lay no claim to blue. This raises questions I am not equipped to answer. For instance, my Chinese friend who passes as a tribal member isn't Indian because she passes. So maybe the birds aren't blue no matter how they are perceived or perceive each other. Or what about that study on race in Brazil where white-identifying people were found to have more African ancestry than black-identifying people? So maybe feeling blue is the operative question, but the trouble is we can ask and ask away, and the birds will never tell us. It's also possible that being blue in Brazil mean something different than being blue in the U.S., or is blueness determined by who's asking the question so that I can voice my conception on birds throughout the world? But if I couldn't base the question on my own conception, then I could only ever answer a fragment of the question, which may be true after all. And if the categorizers were to decide that blue can no longer apply to feathers, wouldn't bluebirds and blue jays be forced to change the names they don't know they have, not to mention great blue herons who don't look blue anyway, except when afternoon lights up their rust gray, rendering them too rich and illuminating to settle quietly under the non-color of granite rainy days, raccoons, squirrels, and ash, all too flat to accommodate the majestic heron who instead was bestowed with the honorary but unachievable blue designation, only to lose it most likely in very short order. And what about Warner Brothers' Roadrunner, who's drawn blue, though the real Roadrunners are brown streaked in black, save some blue skin near the eye? Could it be that the cartoon Roadrunner, that unpreyable prey, that table-turning phoenix, is the only truly blue bird, the one real McCoy, the post-hoc archetype that all other blue aves unknowingly aspire to as they fly off into their equally unblue skies?
Wow. What was the inspiration for that poem?
Again.
What was the inspiration? Well, I had heard that feathers aren't really blue, and then I was, like, on this nature walk, and the naturalist was saying that, and I just thought, well, that makes absolutely no sense, and I was thinking about it and what it could mean and whether it made any sense to me, and just went from there.
Well, was the naturalist talking about just how nothing really is its color, it's just the refraction of light? Is that what the...
Well, some things have pigment in nature, and then these feathers. No birds have blue pigment in their feathers. It's just, like you said, the way the light is reflected makes
That's
it look
kind of
like
an
the feathers
thought,
are blue.
When you really think about it, you know, like you said, the bluebird really isn't blue. That's kind of trippy.
But I think it is.
Yeah. The science is overrated, you know. They don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
If it looks blue, it is blue.
Oh, crap, man. My whole day's disillusioned now.
you base your whole day on the colors of birds?
At times, yeah.
That's very poetic.
Next thing you're going to tell me, blueberry pie isn't blue either.
Pie.
I haven't heard that.
Huh?
The pie
is
a thing.
It's the pie. Oh, God, no, please. That's the only good thing I got in my life is blueberry pie.
That's it?
Consistent. No, it's the one consistent thing I have. Pie.
That's probably one of the most depressing things I've ever heard.
Well, I have other things, but they're consistent as pie.
He's just trying to get sympathy.
Okay.
Huh?
Well, you're not getting sympathy or pie from me.
Yeah, pies. Do you have another poem for us?
Yeah, I have some more.
Let me
read it. Belagered Oases. This is in parts. It's called Belagered Oases. 1. Sometimes passing through desert, I'm startled by lakes like Tool and Indian Tom along California's top edge. White pelicans afloat like sturdy self-contained steamers, yellow-headed blackbirds calling from wide-legged stances on shore rocks, also red wings, gadwalls, and Canada geese with fuzzy near-grown children in tow congregate in these oases ringed by slim layers of cattails and lush marsh grass, then huge swaths of sagebrush set up against dusty buttes that only up close show patches of dry grass breaking up their sand dune smoothness. Now and then a bright, sprinkler-fed field dots the land, sometimes stacked with alfalfa. Coming upon each lake, the heart lightens, letting go of some tension it was carrying, secretly perhaps having feared the dry landscape, Or maybe it simply rides the arc of bird sounds, duck murmurs, and blackbird songs like bagpipe notes, mixing with the calls of terns and grebes to stew an ecstatic cacophony, something like a jungle must be. But there's a way, too, in which tenuousness and rarity sharpen beauty, bring our blurry, distracted glimpses into focus. 2. Downhill road across from Tule Lake, farmers flank their houses with signs, simple black on white, letters rough, honor your oath, people before fish, a new endangered species, Tule Lake farmers, and set against a tractor writ large, adoption, a life without regret. As with any colonists, one can say they don't belong, but what of these homesteading families who pour generations of effort into drawing horseradish or potatoes out of alkaline soil at the urging of a government that saw desert as waste? Once a bankrupt policy enroots itself in successive generations of Stauntons and Schaffners, through decades of early morning labor in isolated roadless winters, or the more daring and desperate winter drives along train tracks, can logic still hold forth about the quixoticness of farming desert, about how endangered Lost River suckers need the irrigation water because it fuels the marsh that shelters them from pelicans, or how some of the last colonies of those same white pelicans will desert their young if farmers drain their nesting grounds, opening their brooding and rearing to coyotes? Does it matter anymore who had the water first? Tell me we can overcome the tragedy that no home feels as real as our own.
Cool. That was good.
Hey, just keep going there. Okay, this one's called Belonging. This is how the mind works. It sees colors, sometimes not registering the thought. The indigenous poet was constantly asked where she was from, her Aztec cheekbones suggesting an unknown. You see, the other cannot walk around just being. The other has to check a box, or the one won't know itself. The one's primacy will be challenged. This is true on the day, even on the days when I wander blissfully oblivious, thinking only that I relish difference. Overall, Washington, D.C. was a very brown place. Arriving from the Pacific Northwest, I noticed brownness and was glad to be briefly awash in it. Lots of faces on the metro, on the street, servers in cafes, hotel workers had African roots, but the class divide manifested only in my subconscious. Behind the hotel desk stood African Americans in dark suits. Near the counter during the day waited red-suited porters whose accents suggested Africa or the Caribbean. But I never thought here in the city black people served me until I got back late after walking city streets lost in painful shoes. My mind mushed from 12 interviews and asked the suit-clad black man standing by the counter what time was checkout. His flustered huh, his troubled eyes jarred my foggy-minded equation of dark skin and suits with service. I flashed back to a friend's birthday party, a short Apache woman describing how white people in garages ask her to park their cars, her personhood supplanted by stature and color, and absorbed with horror my belonging. Hmm.
Cool.
I'll just keep going until you stop me, I guess.
Sure.
This is called Let Me Tell You About the Snakes. Let me tell you about the snakes who threaded the stone wall like a needle, like a grandmother's knitting. Three slender ropes, each a foot long, young but bigger than newborns. It was early spring the way it is in so many poems and so many unexpected pleasures. They'd probably just emerged from the den. Two black with yellow stripes down the sides, yellow bellies, one orange and black with similar markings. They sunned themselves there on the wall by the shoulderless highway. Hold your breath with me and hope for them. They looped through holes in old mortar. Been there since the 50s, said the farmer who stopped his truck to look. They rested on top of each other and under each other. They seemed to move effortlessly. They smelled the world with the flick of a tongue and were not afraid. Their heads ticked back and forth like the pendulum on a clock. To get close, I sat on the wall. They stayed 5 minutes with me, retreating after the farmer arrived. That morning, I thought I'd woken to a day like any other. How could I have been so lucky?
Cool. Hannah, you got anything you want to say?
No, I'm just listening. I mean, there's obviously a very strong, you know, intertwining undercurrent here in the pieces, you know, in regards to nature and the influence there upon. And no, it's very interesting stuff. I like it because you do reference nature a lot, and yet I'm not bored by it. And usually, I hate poems talking about nature. But
see, this is why I have a co-host. I couldn't say stuff like that.
Why not?
I don't know. I just never come up with those terms. I'm good with sarcasm, but not good with the nice, you know, thought out stuff to do with poetry. Every time someone tells me to look at their manuscript, I'm like, oh, crap. They're going to want me to comment. And I don't know how to comment right. I just know what I like.
Yeah, I have trouble commenting, too.
But why did you like it? I'm like, I just do. But I want more. I'm like, oh, crap. You know, so I'm always everybody's always wanting me to look at their manuscripts, and I'm like, you don't want me to look at your manuscript because I'm not going to give you the answer you want. You know, I mean, I could tell you why. I mean, that I like it, but not why. It just moves me. You know, so I try not to look at manuscripts really hard. Do you have some more poems?
Yeah, I do. This is called First Letter to G. God, Goddess. Gods and or goddesses, I invoke you from within and without, humbly asking assistance for your wandering servant in understanding, love, and compassion. My decision-making could also benefit from your assistance, should you have any energy to devote to it. Please note my hesitation in calling myself your servant, having abandoned my formal ideas of you going on 15 years now. It is difficult to pray to an unknown force, so I hope you will forgive my failing to pray almost completely ever since I let go of the hybrid I cobbled from the Old and New Testaments, resolving any conflicts that appeared to my unschooled mind towards Jesus and towards, as I see now, my own value system. It's difficult to know what to make of the Western ideal of choosing religion in the context of life, since choice and obedience have seemed often at odds. Recently, though, as you know, I became enamored of the Dalai Lama's works, but how to explain my hesitation to practice, wanting apparently to put off awakening until it's more convenient? I know well the Baptist answer of sin, but not yet the Buddhist one. In your many-world voice, perhaps you'll resolve some of my questions in the hopefully upcoming dialogue.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't get that wordy. Nope. Makes me want to write a little better.
That's what a good poet.
So do you have more? Huh? Go on.
I said that's what a good poet should do. It should
what?
Remind you why you're writing and make you want to do it better.
Okay.
Just in case you weren't sure.
Positive about anything this early in the morning. I'm only positive that my shoes are untied.
This early in the morning, it's 10, you big baby. Good Lord.
Hey, I get up at 4 in the morning every day. This is my day off. To me, this is early right now. And I don't know how to sleep in it. It really sucks.
Well, that's...
Like, when people tell me they sleep in, I'm like,
problem.
How do you do that?
How do you sleep in?
Yeah.
Drinking copious amounts the night before helps.
See, I couldn't do that. My friends wouldn't talk to me anymore if I did that.
Okay, well then, never mind.
But that used to work. It worked pretty good. I'd wake up halfway through the day and, like, it would be nice, because I wouldn't have to see anybody for a while. But enough of that. Do you have some more poems?
Yeah. This is called A Few Remaining Trees. The future can't touch the past, though it taunts with lists of what we stand to lose. Of course we'll all lose everything except the past itself, even one day our memory of it. It can't be helped. but the past will abide with hills and valleys, gorgeous sunsets, abysses too, perfect dioramas of what will never be again, because even if there's some lesson you repeat and repeat, isn't each iteration successfully more painful or at least different? When I cross the country to visit, my father squeezes meeting me into shopping trips and work appointments, so his wife won't know he breaches her order to stay clear of the daughter who won't be quiet. And I can't deny it hurts to skulk among aisles with my father instead of chatting on his couch or driving to visit grandma. Yet even the sham errand shelters the joy of being two or three and riding aloft his shoulders at the 4th of July parade. There was a thrill of seeing everything for me normally lost amid a forest of grown-up legs and the pride of being held high. The moment lives inside of us like a lady slipper among a few remaining trees.
I like that one.
Cool.
Yeah. Thanks.
So do you have a manuscript ready to go or something to send out to somebody? Or have you published something?
I have a manuscript that I've been sending out for a while.
How's that been going? The whole manuscript sending stuff out.
It's, you know, frustrating, just like sending individual poems out. But sometimes
so
I get
some rejection, or please never write us again.
No, I just get rejections, or I've been a finalist like a couple times.
Well, at least you've been a finalist.
It's true.
You know. Do you get any money for being a finalist, or are they just like, here's a nice little letter?
Nice little letter.
No, no cash. That sucks. They should at least give you a cash for being a finalist or something, you know?
Yeah.
A year subscription to a magazine you don't want to read.
Or they send you the book of the person that won, and I'm not big-hearted enough to enjoy that book.
But then you can read it and go, oh, you sucks compared to me, or something. You know, you know, you just like look at it and tear it apart and go, well, you have bad taste anyway. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But then there's always of, you know, I didn't suck enough to be in it.
There you go. Yeah, I was in a book of poetry where everybody sucked around me, and it was great. Then I realized, why did I bother giving them a poem if I knew everybody was going to suck around me? Oh, yeah, the party was always good. The publication party was the reason to get published in that book. Not the book itself.
There you go.
It worked. Yeah, and they stopped publishing the book, and I stopped drinking, so there you go. So you got more poems?
I do.
Please read, like, three more.
Okay, this one's called...
You really want to read.
What?
I said pick the ones you really, really want to read.
Okay, I'll try.
That's
the same breath.
You want it, you know, this is the one I really hate.
Well, it's funny, because the ones that I hate to read are... I don't think they're the worst. They're just the most embarrassing.
Ooh, read one of those.
No, this one's called The Same Breath. Actually, I used to hate to read this, and I got used to it. The retired naval officer who counsels at a battered woman's shelter described the woman who calls all the time and says, give me shelter, then refuses to provide information about her situation. She'll hang up if you ask too many questions. Sometimes before doing so, she says, God bless you, and fuck you. The workers deduced from the toll-free bill that she's calling Washington from Birmingham, Alabama. At a conference for domestic violence care providers, it turned out that all Washington shelters get calls from the God bless you and fuck you woman. When asked if she couldn't be blocked out, my friend said, we couldn't do that. She obviously needs help. But isn't she faithfully echoing what the world calls out? Who hasn't been told, God bless you and fuck you, in the same breath? Like the day I'd been asked to present draft changes in the enrollment ordinance to the tribal committee. I enter the room and the chairwoman and enrollment officer greet me soberly. As I begin to explain each change and its possible pitfalls, a small elder with a sweet, quiet voice and owl-like glasses demands to know why I am there. Haven't we done well enough without a white person telling us what to do? The faces and hands of the others around the table twitch. Hoping for support, I catch some worried eyes, but silence is required before an elder. Later, the enrollment officer says, I saw those words hit you. They just flattened you. Walking back to my office after the meeting, I pass the custodian who's been out sick, sitting in his truck. He beckons, and as I near, I smell the vague sweet of hard alcohol. Wife's ready to leave me after 17 years, but it's okay, been through 3 marriages. And my best friend's son killed himself. Girlfriend left him, 34 years old, same age as my son. If Eric did that, I'd follow him. But I miss your pretty smile. I love you as a friend. Give me your hand. I'll pray with you. Reluctantly, I turn it over to his wet kiss and disjointed prayer. As I walk off, still too close to tears to excuse myself, he calls, God bless you. And so God bless you and fuck you both strike me as if at random, bullets converging on their separately envisaged targets, the real me locked somewhere inside, apparently invisible through the body's facade, but still they enter. Now I walk around with them like a soldier after the war who carries pieces of it in her body, marveling that organs scarred around metal still function. And how could this story be told without the woman in Birmingham encompassing both in her small, troubled mouth? To her, I say thank you.
Cool. Is that based on a true story?
Is it a true story?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it is.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah, I think Sherman Alexie liked that poem.
I don't know. I love his poems, but I've tried to correspond with him. He never has written back.
I can get a hold of him.
That'd
it takes
cool.
a little bit because he's busy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's become a star.
Yeah.
No, he's actually fun to watch read because he has a sense of humor. He's not boring, you know?
I've watched him several times.
Yeah. He always remembers me because we have this comic book thing going, so I always wear a comic book t-shirt when I see him so he remembers. So there's not a struggle for me
cool.
going, do you remember me? I hate doing that shit. We met so-and-so, so where it's like, ah, crap, I don't want to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So since he sees the comic book shirt, he goes, oh, yeah, we talk about comic books.
That's cool.
Makes it easy. So, yeah, that poem.
Another poem.
Tell a lot of stories. I like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hannah.
Yes.
You want to read something?
I don't have anything.
Yeah, me either.
I have a couple more. Should I
keep
going?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, 2 more, and then we'll call it a show. And actually, it's been fun because you were a last-minute guest that I Shanghai'd you off Facebook.
Yeah.
I like the Facebook Shanghai thing when it works.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Yeah.
This is called fungus. Athlete's foot, the dermatologist pronounces when I show him my dry, flaky heel and describe the little red bumps that sometimes surface along the rim. When I protest that it's lasted a couple of years intermittently, having resisted creams and powders, he retorts, I've had mine since Vietnam, which forces me to see in the dried-up sober doctor a young soldier sweating in the trenches while his choppered squad leader determines maneuvers. After that, I try to like him. Athlete's foot, I go home and contemplate ways to tell my girlfriend. The ringworm, red $0.50 itching, swelling from my shoulder is somehow easier being temporary and probably transmitted by her kittens. At night, our feet bump under the covers, and I cringe at my sin of omission. A few months later, the doctor goes too far, ranting that lawyers are destroying the health profession, exclaiming about my acne, the pimple of my last visit, an impressive stage 4, as if it's the worst case he's seen, but refusing to prescribe medicine because I might see him, sue him. I realize Vietnam or no Vietnam, I don't like him. And I go off to find a new doctor. Months later, the girlfriend will leave me. 30 years into her future, even a fungoid foot won't call up my memory.
Oh.
So you really got athlete's foot?
Yeah, I have athlete's foot.
Wow.
Isn't that the same thing?
I don't know many women that talk about their feet like that.
What?
I said, isn't that the same thing as ringworm?
It is. It's the same fungus, but
fungus, okay.
Ringworm goes away because I don't know. I guess it depends on where you have it in the feet. Like,
well, no, I got ringworm on my right hand from like a bad manicure place that didn't clean their instruments.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was bad. Like, it spread like all over my hand, and I went to, you know, one of those horrible HMO doctors, and they didn't know what it was. So by the time I saw a dermatologist that knew what he was talking about, it had gone from like a small spot on my hand all the way up my arm.
Oh,
wow, you
bad.
Picture that?
It was bad. What?
Got a picture of that? I'm kind of curious.
No, just imagine the most disgusting thing you've ever seen in your life.
I'm sure you could Google ringworm and get some pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Just imagine, like, Walter Matthau's face with my arm.
Hey, I like Walter Matthau.
So do I, but the man looked like a deflated tire.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
I did.
I don't know.
I'd say it again. Fungus is fun. Okay.
Whoa! Holy crap. You are right, it's pretty gross.
I told you.
Oh, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so am I.
I got no sarcasm for those pictures. Damn. I want to wish that on somebody I don't like. I got a list. Wow.
All right, and you got one more poem for us?
I have one more.
Okay, awesome.
Ink. At Christian camp, aged 14, I remember the counselor explaining, wherever a guy touches you, it's like ink staining you. It never goes away. The other campers and I gazed back at our pretty straight-haired counselor, her face drawn with regret, and nodded, struck by our potential sin. No one mentioned being touched by other women then, but now that you're gone and the memory of your hands on my body, though replayed almost hourly like so many videos, fades. I wonder about that ink threatened or promised so long ago. Shouldn't it be like any threat of punishment taken in and stored, mine for eternity? It must be invisible, residue of joy in the cells of the nipples you'd skim then suck. Dream tinges along my waist's inlets where your hand cinched as we danced. Deep smolder that simmers from hours when fingers or silicone, rough or tender. I was always happy, taken up with the pleasures of giving. Ah, the varieties of sacrifice. But as I imagine a future fraught with missing you, I wish the ink blared so I could point to it and say, see how we loved each other. Look at the enormous indigo birthmark I'll always carry for her. Like the flame in a monument that never goes out. Now I know those tattoos of lovers' names aren't born of a foolish belief in permanence, but of a hope to pry a splinter out of the flux, even if the price is bound to be regret.
Wow. Thanks a lot. Thanks for being our Shanghai guest today.
Yay!
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll be sending you a link once the show downloads, and then you can send it around.
Great.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And now it's the ending portion of the show where I actually have to tell people what's coming up. Let's see, today at 1:30, we have For the Love of Poetry of Cassandra Love as she talks to Nikki Giovanni. And then tomorrow at 5 p.m., we have Between the Sheets with Stacey Mandrasini, Roy Johnston, as they talk to Chris Abani of Black Goat Press. And then the 24th, we have Brian Sanders talking to David R. Rodriguez, How Race Survived U.S. History. October 25th, we have 3 p.m., Elena R. Alexander talking to A.B. Spellman. And then back here again, we have next Sunday at 12 o'clock, 12 p.m., we have Dorian Lux and Michelle Biting. And Hannah, you got anything coming up in next week other than going to jail?
No.
Nothing? Nada? All right. Well, thanks again for listening. And that's it for the show today.
All right. Thank you so much again for being on. I really appreciate it.
Safeway has everything you need every day. Fresh food and low Safeway prices. And now you can save even more during the huge anniversary sale. Right now, shop with your club card and pick up a 2-pound package of fresh sweet strawberries, $2.99 each. And great for summer grilling, get juicy USDA choice beef loin T-bone steaks, value packs, just $5.97 a pound. Plus, pick up Pepsi 12-pack 12-ounce cans, buy two, get two free. The Safeway anniversary sale, it's huge. Safeway has everything you need every day. Fresh food and low Safeway prices. And now you can save even more during the huge anniversary sale. Right now, shop with your club card and pick up a 2-pound package of fresh sweet strawberries, $2.99 each. And great for summer grilling, get juicy USDA choice beef loin T-bone steaks, value packs, just $5.97 a pound. Plus, pick up Pepsi 12-pack 12-ounce cans, buy two, get two free. The Safeway anniversary sale, it's huge.